We're going to continue the lessons that we have been covering in 1 Corinthians 10. Paul had in chapter 9, just as a brief review, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and in verse 24, Paul had warned the Corinthians. He says, Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way, not as without aim. I box in such a way, not as beating the air. But I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I preach to others, I myself will not be disqualified. It is not guaranteed that just because you became a Christian that you're going to reach heaven. There's effort that must be put in. And an example that was used is that of those in the Jews who wandered through the wilderness. And in Jude verse 5, it says, I now desire to remind you, though you know all things once for all, that the Lord, after saving a people out of the land of Egypt, subsequently destroyed those who did not believe. And Paul's point in 1 Corinthians 10 is to show that the Israelites had basically the same advantages that we did. And starting in verse 1 and verse 10, it says, For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food. All drank the same spiritual drink. For they were drinking a spiritual rock which followed them, and that rock was Christ. And so Paul talks about the salvation that they had from the corruption and bondage of Egypt and makes that a parallel to the baptism of a Christian. He likens the reception of manna and water to the spiritual food and drink that each Christian partakes in. And he even states that Christ was on their side, being with them in the wilderness. And yet, despite all their advantages, Paul says in verse 5, Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now, we discussed the passage in verse 7 as our illustration. One of the things why they failed to reach Canaan. But we're going to go on and look at verse 6. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 6, Now these things happen as an example to us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved. This particular story takes place right after they leave Mount Sinai. At Mount Sinai, we already talked about last week, they had failed to follow God, setting up an idol while God's presence was right above them. Right after God told them, don't do this. Several times. Now they're leaving Mount Sinai. They have witnessed many of their people already being killed. And God's displeasure with them. And we get to Numbers chapter 10. In fact, here's our, as you're turning over there. So we're at Mount Sinai, and now we're heading towards the land of Canaan. But in Numbers chapter 10, and in verse 11, Now in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th of the month, the cloud was lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony. And the sons of Israel set out on their journeys from the wilderness of Sinai. Then the cloud lifted down in the wilderness of Paran. So they moved out for the first time according to the commandment of the Lord through Moses. Sometimes we forget, they stayed a whole 2 years in this wilderness at the base of Mount Sinai. And in chapter 11, and in verse 4, as they're traveling along, it says, the rabble who were among them had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There's nothing at all to look at except this manna. Ever since they left the land of Egypt, God has been supplying the people with all the food that they need. It's been 2 years. And they had manna. Manna for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You want a snack? Well, there's manna. But they had become bored with the lack of variety. It's not that manna wasn't good tasting, it's just they've been eating it for 2 years and nothing else. They wanted meat. They wanted vegetables. They wanted some spice to their food. Why tell the story? Well, have you ever heard of people who complain about services being too boring? We do the same basic thing each week. We sing, we pray, we partake of the Lord's Supper, and this, oh no, there goes Jeff against giving another lesson. People want something more to spice up the services. And so you hear about people having hand clapping, candlelight services, choirs, instrumental music, mood lighting. And the list is endless of the innovations people seek to desire for something different. Now, why was Paul telling this story? Because, well, the Corinthians were involved in innovating. For instance, you get in 1 Corinthians 14, we had women speaking up in services. We had people using their tongue speaking as a way of showing off. And so Paul wanted to bring this particular story up to emphasize the fact that we can't be wanting something different all the time, because things that are different from what God wants, well, those are evil things. Now, the people got what they desired. In Numbers chapter 11 and in verse 31, it says, now there went forth a wind from the Lord, and it brought quail from the sea, and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. The people went out, spent all day and all night and all the next day gathering the quail. He who gathered least gathered 10 homers. And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. While the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people. And the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague. And so the name of that place was called Kibras Hataba, because there they buried the people who had been greedy. He struck them down while they were satisfying their greed. You say, well, wait a minute. What's going on here? Because they complained and God says, yeah, fine. And God's the one who brought the quail in. But sometimes it's because the units are different. We don't think about it. God brought in not just a little bit of quail. If you imagine, you know, the crowd of the Israelites, we're talking about, what, roughly about 2 million people? About twice, at least twice as much as the city of Omaha and the region holds? Now imagine how big that camp had to be. And then you go a day's journey, what, about 10, 20 miles to one side and 10 to 20 miles to the other side. Now we've got a really big spot. And we got quail piled to the height of 2 cubits, right? Or is it 3 cubits? I forgot how many cubits it was. 2 cubits. 3 feet deep of quail. And then these people go out, and they don't get just a few quail. He said the least of them got 10 homers. I think I calculated it out once. That comes out to about 6 40-gallon garbage bags full of quails. That's the least. A lot of people got more. In other words, they weren't trusting that God would continue to supply the meat. And it was for their greed. In fact, I got the impression that they were sitting down to eat prior to even cooking the birds. That's how greedy they were. And while it was still between their teeth, as they took a bite of it, that's when God just said, that's enough. You know, there's a lot of congregations running after innovations. And nothing will stop them. But they're going to end up dying in their greed. Take a look at Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 1. And in verse 6. I am amazed that you're so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another, only that there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is to be accursed. As we said before, so I say again now, if any man is preaching to you a gospel which is contrary to what you received, he is to be accursed. The next story that we want to look at, again, like I said, we're not going in order in 1 Corinthians 10, is the one that's in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 10. It says, "Nor grumble as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer." Not a lot of clues about which story we're talking about. But it's not hard to locate. You see, after Israel left that area, they continued to wander up, heading to the land of Canaan, going into the south edge. And they sent out 12 spies, of which 10 came back saying, "Oh, it's a great land, but we can't conquer it. There's too big people. We're just not going to be able to do this." 2 of them said we could do this, but 10 didn't. And so the people listened to the 10 and said, and so God says, "Fine. If that's what you want, you're going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years until you all die, and I'll take your kids in." And the Israelites said, "Well, you know what? It sounds really good. We're going to go conquer the land of Canaan after all." And Moses warned them, "Don't do it, because God already told you what you're going to do." But they went anyway, and they got repulsed. And you know what? This was too much for some of the people. Even though they're told, "Don't do this," they decided that it was all wrong. In Numbers chapter 16, Numbers chapter 16, and starting with verse 1. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben, took action. They rose up before Moses, together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen in the assembly, men of renown. They assembled together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You have gone far enough, for all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" It's a people's rebellion. And notice, this is not just any old people. These are leading men. Famous people among the Israelites. 250 who stood up and said no. Now Moses opposed them. When Moses heard this, he fell on his face and he spoke to Korah and all his companions, company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy and who will bring him near to himself. Even the one whom he will choose, he will bring near to himself. Do this, take censers for yourselves, Korah and all your company, and put fire in them, and lay incense on them in the presence of the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the one who is holy. You've gone far enough, you sons of Levi." Now, you know, we kind of know the story, and we know who's the victor. But think about what was happening here. We have people who are complaining about what the leadership that's going on, which Moses is providing the leadership. They stage a rebellion. Moses opposes them very bluntly. How do you think the people would take that? You see, God was looking at this and was just ready to say, "Forget this. We're just going to wipe them all out again." I forgot how many times God decides he's going to wipe them out. But this is yet another time that God says, "Let's just wipe them all out. We're going to start all over again. This is not worth it." In Numbers chapter 16, verse 18, "So they each took his own censer and put fire on it, and laid incense on it, and it stood at the doorway of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. Thus Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the doorway of the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and said, 'Separate yourself from among this congregation, that I may consume them instantly.'" "But they fell on their face and said, 'O God, God of the spirits of all flesh, when one man sin, will you be angry with the entire congregation?'" Now I want you to understand, they're rebelling against Moses. And when God says, "Okay, that's it. Step back, I'm wiping them out." It is Moses and Aaron who plead with God not to wipe the whole congregation out just because a few of them sinned. Now God gave everyone an opportunity to choose whether to stand with Korah or not. And then Moses pronounces the judgment. We're going to jump down to verse 28. "And Moses said, 'By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these deeds, for this is not my doing. If these men die the death of all men, or if they suffer the fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens up his mouth and swallows them up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into Sheol, then you will understand that these men have spurned the Lord. As he finished speaking all these words, the ground that was under them split open. And the earth opened his mouth and swallowed them up and their households and all these men who belonged to Korah and their possessions. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive to Sheol. And the earth closed over them and they perished from the midst of the assembly. Can you imagine standing there seeing that happen? Just the ground just splits open and all these people just drop and then it closes back. And all Israel who were around them fled at their outcry. For they said, the earth may swallow us up. Fire also came from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. So not only did the ground swallow up, but I imagine it's lightning. Lightning zapping 250 guys and frying them who were standing in front of the tent. And everybody's panicked. Everybody's running for their life because they're afraid they're next because they know they're guilty. Solve the problem, right? The very next day, in Numbers chapter 16, verse 41, but on the next day, all the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, you are the ones who caused the death of the Lord's people. And every time I read that, I'm flabbergasted. Even though I've seen it happen. I've seen this reaction to people repeatedly. That the person who stands up and says, no, this is wrong. And then someone gets huffy and they walk out. The one who's standing saying, this is what God says, is the one who's blamed, saying, you're the one that drove them out. Moses here is blamed for killing God's people. And you know what God says again? In verse 44, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, get away from this congregation, I may consume them instantly. Then they fell on their faces. God said, this is too much. I'm wiping them out again. And again, Moses and Aaron are the ones who intercede. The ones they're rebelling with. The ones they just blamed. Even though they're just the ones who announced. Moses is just the one who announced the death. How the death was going to be. He didn't cause it. He doesn't have the power to open up words. He doesn't have the power to zap people with 250 people with fire. And the Lord is so mad, even though Moses and Aaron are intervening, God still sends a plague among the people. And they're dying rapidly. And Moses tells Aaron to quickly bring a censer to make atonement. And as I read this, I want you to understand, Aaron is not a spring chicken. He's 86 years old. He's nearing the end of his life. He's not going to die in not too distant future. He grabs a censer and runs. Numbers 16, verses 46. Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put fire in it from the altar. Lay incense on it and bring it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them. For wrath has gone forth from the Lord. The plague has begun. Then Aaron took it as Moses had spoken and ran into the midst of the assembly. For behold, the plague was had begun among the people, so he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. He took his stand between the dead and the living, so the plague was checked. He was running between the people, dividing who had the plague and those that didn't. And he saved as many as he could. Aaron was willing to put his life on the line. He stood before the Lord's plague. All four people that had just accused him and his brother of killing the God's people. And even with that effort, 14,700 people died. That's not counting the people who died the day before in the rebellion. So again, we ask the question, why did Paul select this story? Well, if you look through the book of 1 Corinthians, it's a book that contains a lot of harsh rebukes. The Corinthians have been getting involved in a large number of sins. Paul told them to withdraw from a wayward brother. He knew the nature of men. Instead of seeing this man dead in his sins, they would blame the messenger of the bad news. It's your fault that he's not going to church anymore. Paul, you're the one who drove him out. And like I said, it happens all the time. When someone sins and men are bold enough to say it cannot be tolerated, after the sinners are removed, there always will be some people who will turn against those who are doing the Lord's command and blame them for dividing the church and driving Christians away from the church. In fact, as I think about it, I can't think of a time it hasn't happened. I've been blamed a large number of times for false teachers leaving this congregation. And I suspect it will continue to the end of my life. Because it's human nature. It's never the sinner's fault. It's the fault of those who oppose sin. And many die because they will not oppose sin. And so they will not reach heaven. Those who stand should take note of Moses and Aaron. It was their intervention that saved those who could be saved. I got my notes behind. Yeah, I think I can fit one more story in here. Nope. I'm going to pause there. Sorry, I got behind on my notes. But I want you to think about these things. These stories are here for us. They're telling us about the nature of the church. They're telling us about the nature of people and how they behave. But it's also explaining why Paul had made that earlier statement that you really have to work at it to get to heaven. You can't just drift in. You have to make a concerted effort. And a lot of people won't put in the effort. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. For those who are children of God and would like the prayers of the brethren on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the selected.